Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about podcasts while driving, some real projects updates. So it's probably a little bit difficult to listen to because I've got to give you the overall context, the projects and the update. So the overall context is that I'm working on a trilogy or three paths of real projects for the sort of fundamental the objective of the projects is to have a real demonstrable foundation of advanced concepts. So this is one of the fundamental problems. I have a combination of communication problems. Now, your average person doesn't know things, and it's not their fault. It's just sort of compounded fault of the education system, that these fundamental concepts are so difficult to grasp because we've sort of neglected everybody. And so it's just part of the territory that I'm aiming at areas which are fundamentally people, their reaction is to throw their hands up and not listen. And that's what I'm trying to aim to do, is actually change that behaviour. Part of the change to their behaviour is having something that they can see, touch and feel. Again, while there are three projects, it's similar to the Great Escape, where you've got several tunnels going at the same time, and if the Germans are looking at one, you can be digging at the other. If another one has to go slow, you're doing three times simultaneously. And so the idea is to actually produce something, produce it in a sweet spot that is physical. It's, you know, there's something happening, it's extensive, and there's a little side story of why you want these projects and why you plan in a particular way. So it's not just by chance that these projects come up. They're sort of designed to be beyond the achievement of the average university, the average person. And yet, when demonstrated, show a superior technology going ahead. And I'll just go off to the side because this is a podcast, I've got some time. At the time, China, going back in history to China around the time of after Marco Polo and stuff like that, China closed up again, and similar to Japan, had a very closed society. It was necessary to keep aliens out so that their society could keep on functioning the way that it was. And so people who were able to get in and negotiate in the place were people who were able to learn the culture and think about not just trade, but actually getting into the place. And that was Jesuits, Society of Jesus. So the Jesuits were basically the intellectual shock troops of the church, working against or being counter-Reformation. So there were, if the Reformation was due to a certain degree of enlightenment post the Renaissance period, the counter-Reformation was to, well, the theory of the church is that it doesn't really have enough logic, enough intelligence behind it. It's basically the business model of the church was basically fundamentally confusion and corruption. Those two were but out of that you had a separate, a very well organized, militarily organized situation. And so you had Francis Xavier, who was a Spanish soldier, got wounded, saw the Bible, got converted to the Bible. He got wounded in his leg, a cannonball hit his leg, apparently. I only remember that from my teaching because I went to Xavier College. So he became a missionary in Japan and then gradually just got a foothold in China. And the person after him was another Jesuit called Ricci. So these are church scientists. And Ricci show the mechanical clocks and the mechanical stuff of the West, and the Chinese state was based on control of the knowledge. That the knowledge didn't have to be correct, but it had to be the knowledge going into the state. So what happened there is that they had a predict-off. You predicted an eclipse, I predicted an eclipse of the sun, and when they said, all right, and when the time came for the eclipse of the sun to come across, it just didn't happen, and then time passed, and the Jesuits got it right, and of course, this cut-through was a real cut-through moment when they said, all right, we're going to have to adopt this Jesuit philosophy, because the entire process thinking of the Chinese state was to do with astronomy. It was a heavenly kingdom, the forbidden city, all this type of stuff. But essentially, it was an ancient civilization, but where we had astrology came before the event. What actually happened is that for them, astrology came after the event. So astrology was like a big brother. The stars were up there, and if the stars went wrong, you had already done something wrong. The gods were angry, and you just had to get rid of your ruler. And so because of this, it's sort of similarly, nowadays, science has got a similar thing. Science is, rather than predictive and problem-solving, it's science is a big stick that we use on our politicians, and therefore the politicians say, yeah, you know, let's control them. But that being said, this you've got basically a similar case here where it's confusion and corruption is the way things are done, and these are selecting the RISI experiments, the RISI directives. And so the first directive is the Einstein quantum flip pendulum. And what I've done is that, like, I know my quantum mechanics, I know my science, I know the weak points of education. They have a system of education called it's not iconoclast, iconicism. They show the icon of Einstein, and then they make a statement. So the actual picture of Einstein is the logic behind a statement. And so I know there's a whole class of weakness, including ridiculous HSC questions and associated with this fundamental flaw of the way we're doing things. I'm actually doing well. I'm crossing the Nepean River at this point in time. I should explain that I am driving off to rehab, and I have these periods of times where I can talk about this, and you know, all these weird things are happening, because as I listen, my voice changes, the depth and projection changes, my handwriting changes on a weekly basis. Sometimes it's scratchy, sometimes it's big, sometimes it's, who knows what's going on. The neurologists have got a right on top of the process. Okay, so the idea is to build, to get the gist of the Einstein pendulum and just leave it in the back brain and let it ferment. And so what I've done is I've built a solenoid which flips the magnetic field north to south, south to north. And in this solenoid, so I've gone through previously how I've built the solenoid, and again, it's all the little things that should come together, from basic experience, skill, going through to wind it up and mount it. And I've mounted it on a 80-20 rig. And the first time, it's one of these strange things. You build it first and then you reconfigure it. I had a T, a cross, and now I've actually got it standing on a T. It's more elegant, and getting it smaller and all this type of stuff. And so what I've done is I've got a power supply. It's not the best power supply. There is a better power supply, so I know I've got a factor of three in my kit bag that I can use. I can't wait to use it because I've seen the effect. The effect is really, really obvious. So what happens is that it gets a little pick every time it gets the little flick from the electrons, and then the electrons move up and down. And I'll give it a little bit more of experience. There's a Great Western Highway. Okay, well, I'm not on that one. It's telling us, avoid the area. Oh, dear, I'm going up past Kingswood. I hope... my son's up in this area, so I hope he's okay. Ben? No, he's not. He should be okay. Okay, so this little pincher, which happens to be a ferrite core, and, of course, in your brain, you think, I've got to get a rod like this, getting a piece of iron is going to be horrid. And ferrite's got all these good properties, so I haven't done any research or analysis of this. What can you do? What can you get within the minimum amount of processing? So this is different from academic work where you go through rigorously and show your supervisor, and the supervisor go, oh, let me think about this, and you do all your work and show it. It was, I have to build this pendulum. What do I have an ability to get something which is geometrically sharp, all these properties, a ferrite rod, there's nothing else going on. So I have this ferrite rod, and this ferrite rod, I put in a torsion component. Now, this ferrite rod will not naturally sit in the center of this field. It will actually drift off. So a process of taking the field lines in, and then there's a small... In the process of doing that, it creates a field gradient. So it's pretty amazing stuff. So you can have a fairly uniform field, but the ferrite rod interacts with it, then creates a field gradient, and then drifts across. It's sort of something which is naturally unstable. So this is the first progress thing. The great thing is that come a week or so, I'll be able to get my favourite power supply back. Ask for it. So yeah, I'm a teacher off work, and I've actually just... And I'm also driving through slightly noisy parts of the freeway, so I hope you can still hear me at this stage. So this power supply will come in, and I've cracked the torsion pendulum business. I'll just describe essentially what it is. So the torsion pendulum requires an anchor point. Initially, I anchored it by magnetic field anchoring, because this is like L crazy, because this, if you've got an asymmetry, a radial asymmetry in your field pinching and a radial symmetry in your thing, you're going to create a torque. So this is, it took me a while to do it. So when I first did it, I got a massive effect. I'm sure there was some torque process happening in it. So what I've done is I've got a length of string, and I've a length of cotton, and I've looped it four times, so there's four parallel strands. I'm going to sneeze, unfortunately, and I can't stop it at this stage. I've got four strands, and I tied them up, so I've got basically a length of cotton, four strands thick, and into that cotton, I put my pendulum halfway through, and then make sure that the cotton goes from top to bottom over the four symmetry points in my pendulum. Almost right, get it almost right. Then wrap it, bind it in with plumber's tape, Teflon tape, something which, I don't know, I've always worked with the Teflon and sort of have a good understanding and feel for it. It's the ideal lightweight stuff. So the strings go from the top anchor point down to the bottom anchor point being around the pendulum. The pendulum is in the centre, and so it's not a side-to-side pendulum, it's a torsion pendulum, and then the strings are distributed around, so you've got basically a pyramid at the top and a pyramid at the bottom. And at the top, I can then whack a little rubber band to it to actually tension it, and it works an absolute dream. And what I do is I take a movie of the pendulum, and then from the movie, I analyze the movie frame by frame, or yeah, until it's the same point. Enter the frame number, the second and frame number, so it's the frame numbers are up to 30 each, and then the second is sort of, I don't know, I suppose it does make sense. Just enter it in, and then I've got an Excel spreadsheet, just whack it in, and it does a linear fit for me. Then I divide that by two in my Arduino, and then that sets the rocker. Switch it on, and there it goes. And so the next level of things. So the great thing is that I'm at sort of level one. I've got a scientist friend visiting next Monday, Australia Day. So Australia Day is Saturday, and so we get, being Australians, we get a holiday on the Tuesday, so on the Monday. He'll come over and I'll be able to show it to him. Now, I know I've got a factor of three in the basket. Now, one of the things is that I can up the torsion of this pendulum very high. So one of the things I'm aware of is that if you make something small, it's actually not going to... The main thing that slows down a pendulum is wind resistance. Surely that must be it. So if you've got something small, it can. It's this. You're limited by the speed of it. And one of the things is that you get a push per reversal. So the aim here is to get as many reversals in as possible, so you can see it. Because what happens is, there's a little bit of a tension here, because when it first switches on, there's a little bit of a shake, you're not sure, then tick, tick, tick. By the fourth shake, it's definitely there, and by the tenth, it's stabilized. 20, it's reached pretty much its max now. You want to go higher, and what happens is that the relays, I've got it going with Arduino, hitting some relays. Now, unfortunately, I have my Arduino. In that time, I've worked out how you wire up Arduinos, because there's, a basic .5 PCB pin standard, which, you know, I shouldn't say bugger me, I didn't know about that. So this is the advantages of this, because A, it's testing my memory, B, it's testing my soldering skills, fine motor skills, observation, a bit of computation. So it's all good for the grist, and it also produces a Einstein pendulum at the moment. Right, so what I've done is I've ordered some solid state relays. So your real relays have a dead timer. That click, when it's doing that click sound, it's doing nothing. It may be going fast, maybe doing in a 20. You need it even faster than that, so solid state. So I ordered for $12, delivered from a company called Good Bang. And you go, what the heck? I'm going to get a package, a small package from Good Bang, and of course, with sort of reduced invalid sort of income, the money is really, really tight, and even this $10 for this set of solid state relays, and I still can't quite get all the solid state relays to work the way I want, but it's a beautiful piece of pieces. So this is transistor logic TTL controlled relay, And the advantage of this is that your ratio of dead time, you know, you can kill the dead time flat. And then I can increase the tension and increase the frequency. Now, of course, the more you increase the frequency, as you increase the tension, there's several things. You're increasing, reducing the side-to-side movement of it, but you're also moving the frequency, rotational frequency, away from the pendulum frequency. And that's the worst thing you could possibly do, is have your pendulum frequency near your torsion frequency, because the two then will interfere with each other. It will be two modes of energy excitation. You can go through the two of them. So that will go across. So that's just a big advantage. I'll be at this hospital suite, as they say in the classics, you know, pretty soon. So that's to get across. Now, as you explain things, what I need now is I've worked out how to do this. I was going to do what I, you know, if I had my time, I'd have a suitcase full of little flywheels spun up by air. Air would just burst through these flywheels and spin them up, and you know, you could just, it would be very obvious. But what I want to do is, I'm thinking about it. I should have a battery. So. Yeah, so a computer fan, which is battery powered. You know, your battery, one of those battery packs, powering a USB fan, and you rip the break off the fan blades and replace it with a flat plate with a fly disc, flywheel in it, so it becomes a flywheel, and so you get the bearing, the motor, and stuff like that. So people can actually feel what something spinning is like. So you could obviously case it up so someone could stand, so, you know, not touch it or something. I'm just trying to think how one could do it. So you can actually hand someone something spinning in your hand, and then you say, well, this is what we're doing with flipping it. And then put it in a flipper, some sort of flipper, and see it rock. And so what I've discovered is that we may have difficulty teaching that Einstein is sometimes wrong. She was wrong in this one. We maybe have difficulty teaching spin, but we haven't even really taught angular momentum. So we've got all these things coming across for it. So that's, as I speak, you see these sort of things go across. Now, I must admit, I am slower than when I was at an unfettered research scientist. I could go a lot faster than this. Yeah, but they actually have this handheld angular momentum feeler that you can actually feel this spin thing speed up. I was wondering with it's just how many amps, what's the amp hours, how long you can spin one of these little discs for. Now, the idea is that you have one of those, let the person play with it, then you slot it in a device which will flip it from time, you know, regularly flip it. And I don't know whether you want another battery-held device, I don't know. Got to really think about how you do it, you know, get the flip. So, have to really, really think about flip it. So you want this spin of electrons. What I really wanted is a suitcase full of these flywheels to get the idea that these flywheels are throughout the entire object. They're just not one of them. There's millions of them. And so, you know, I want to get that concept across. Here we go. I'm just trying to see. So, there's a cops going along, and they'll be looking at me. It's interesting that there's on the buses, there's cameras on all buses that they're filming everything. They haven't got dashboard cam, they've got 360 degree round cam for it. So, The idea is that this is a way, in terms of this could have been a multiple month dead end project, and it's a way, and there's a little bit of turn in it, and I've got a factor of three and increased speed, and you know, it's a way, and it's getting portable, a bit more robust. So I've just got to basically work on it. So that's project one, Reese operational project one. Isn't that beautiful? Project two is Thompson effect. Now, the when you think about it, you think, oh my God, I've got to get an iron bar, and I've got to get current temperature, current through that, current density through that. How am I going to do that? Then I've got to measure the temperature on it, and then, oh, just beyond. And of course, just let it incubate in your head. So this is a Peltier effect. So you have an iron bar heated at one point, and the current going into it experiences the opposite gradient going away from the heat point. And this means that the current exerts a heating and cooling effect. Okay, and the reason you want to do this is fundamental quantum mechanics. Now, the first thing to do is to work out, it's current density and temperature and blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, you've got to hit the maximum current temperature density. Oh, it's going to be a wire, a middle, and it's got to be iron because copper doesn't have to show this effect. Okay, this as well. And temperature. How am I going to measure temperature? Oh, well, I can measure expansion. I can measure expansion rather than temperature. So immediately you'll be taking away from all this complicated infrared imagery to just a microscope down on these little feet. And but then that's where the complexity really begins. I'll have to stop this at some stage and continue it later as I get to rehab. So you're not out there, you can't remind me to start talking when I get back into this about the Thompson effect. So Reese cut through with an experiment. And I can't cut through anything. It's, you know, the doors are locked. I can't get into the gymnasium or whatever it is. I can't get in. But I can work on projects, and I can quietly make a mistake, not get it right first time. But then the advantage is that at the end you can show your final project. It's like at the end they show the final thing. I am the head of this. I am the principal of that. I can show, and this is the experiment. So there's three, Operation Reese. Reese, I'll have to get the pronunciation of that. Thanks a lot for listening. Okay, I've just come out of the rehab, so it would have sounds like it's spent no time at all, but it was a pretty grueling experience. The thing is that they're always tricky. So this time, I was asked to, you know, this OT just lunge forward holding this basketball, you know, what's so hard with that? And I had to follow it. And I picked it. The basketball weighs 5-6 kilograms. It was sort of massive. But it's, and that sort of unlocked all my back muscles. It's pretty amazing exercise they're doing. And of course, the boxing gets tougher and tougher every week. You know, like this is 2 minutes. And a lot of you would think, oh, 2 minutes is nothing, but 2 minutes, this is hitting that little T-shaped thing back and forth. This is not the dropping one, down one that you see in the movies. This is the one up on a pole. Oh, 2 minutes is really, really tough. So I'm actually going to go now and try and explain a really, really tough concept. I'm just also trying not to crash the car as I'm waiting for these cars to attempted to dribble out around the corner. What the heck are you doing, mate?
Okay.
Turn on my lights, high beam lights.
I'm going to wait for you to go around.
Yeah, so what we're in the RISI code. I sort of like the RISI code. It's like the Da Vinci code. It's trying to follow, to design these experiments which flabbergast the eunuch in white. You know, the Chinese people, you know, correctly predicting the eclipse and therefore dissolving the order which has been built up to keep you outside. So that's the concept there. And I've talked about the Einstein's time turner. Spin turner. I like it. Time turner gives you a spin turner is a way of doing it. So I suppose it's really, when I really think about it, deeply involved with time. I wonder whether things that travel at the speed of light don't experience time. It's sort of a very interesting concept that mass and time go together. But getting back to it, it's the Thompson effect. Now, the demonstrations of it on the internet are obvious frauds if you actually put in the numbers and the current density that they'd have to get. They'd have to get hundreds and hundreds of amps going through these wires, these rods. So the rods have to be scaled down. Now, you also have to measure the temperature. And you measure the temperature with the thermometer. But there is a better thing to do is measure the temperature by expansion. And to get the heating up, I just have over a small form. This is small gauge, sub-millimeter gauge, steel fencing wire. There's nothing all that fantastic about it. That'll do. Okay, here we go. I picked up a fiberglass tent pole. Now, of course, these are the most wicked, fearsome things developed by the devil, these poles, because they've got these very thin glass fibers which get into your hand. Yuck. As far as I'm concerned, totally illegal. You know, fiberglass poles of tents should be totally illegal. So this is just like it's probably like a stay of one of those cheap umbrellas. That's very poles. So wind it around there a few times. 10 times it did. And then, you've got two legs, and these are quite literally legs, and you want to get these legs such that as you heat it up, as you put current through it, the heat will build up inside your coil for two reasons. One is that the coil is next to each other, and the second reason is that the increased resistance will mean that the increased temperature will mean increased resistance, will mean a runaway power outlet. And so 10 coils are just fine because I had a 12 volt half amp thing, power supply, which I tried this up on. Unfortunately, the story is I don't know whether I've blown it. It's sort of rather a complex thing. Looked at it, and you have to design this in such a way that you have two equal lengths of wire coming from these coils that bend back in onto each other, so you can see the differential expansion of the two under a microscope, i.e. the current going in will cause contraction, the current going out will cause expansion due to temperature differences. So if you can get the two wire going in, wire going out, and bending past each other such that they go each underneath the microscope, you can measure a fraction of degrees integrated over the length of the wire. Now, of course, you've got a lot to think about here, because you can have a long wire which gives you greater expansion, but it's the temperature gradient times the current density which gives you the amount of cooling, and you want the maximum amount of cooling in the minimum amount of area. So it's basically only 10-15 millimeters of wire that I have either side. And this is just looking over the equations, not actually running them through a computer or anything like that. I'm just saying, like, it'll do that. So I've got this, and I did a mock-up, basically, of it, just wound it up, and so you've got this, the heating coil out of this, this comes the in and out arm coming down. They then, after a thing, fold into each other, so they're parallel, and then down into two spirals. And the idea of these spirals is that they sit in water. So the spirals then go 90 degrees this down. They sit in water, and so this is a temperature sink. And so you've got the temperature source and temperature, you know, high temperature, low temperature, temperature gradient, temperature source, all going through it. So surely that's the way to go. But of course, as I did it, you could perhaps see something. Not I didn't bring in the microscope at this stage, but then you realise that it's the relative security. You want to actually have the wire going down able to freely expand relative to the top. So you've got your top coil. And so at this stage, I've designed something which will work. And I've got a throw switch which allows you to reverse the current, which is sort of a very satisfying thing to do. I've just out of someone's kit, electronics kit somewhere. I've given the kids at some stage that no doubt sort of been, I don't want this anymore. So I've got that throw switch, and I'm sort of halfway through the complex topography. So there's a coil, a central coil coming out left and right, 15 centimeters out, which I then bent parallel down from the coil, midway from the coil, so they go into the coil halfway through. So this is precision bending, and then at a certain point they then bend inwards, such you can compare through a right angle, and then from that right angle they've then bent down and then bent back to give you enough space, and then a huge coil, which is okay. But then what you want to do is that the problem is that you want to ensure that it pushes down. So what could happen is that the coil at the top has to, if it flexes at all, it will ruin your entire experiment. So I have to actually mount it on a glass rod. Now, a 3mm glass rod. So it's got something to push against, so it will definitely, it can't just push up. It'll push relative, I suppose it's relative to each other is the main thing, that this rod is a major thing. It won't push, it won't bend and flex it up. So the problem, you've got the in and out arm, which is 15 centimeters long, and it's, the coils go down and sit in the water. And so you've got your heat source, temperature bath, everything else, but you need your glass rod. And the bloody thing is that of all my little glass collection, I've taken it all into school, because what I do is, because my father used to be involved in making tubes for Cyrac, I've been taught how to glass blow. Not really glass, enough to spellbind the kids as you blow up the thing for a tube, and you showed how to wind off nipples, glass nipples, as they're called, and do vacuum systems to appreciate how it's all done. So unfortunately I've taken those in school, and I don't have these. What I really want is a glass rod, and I don't want a soda glass rod, because these, I don't know, you got to treat them right. You basically got to temper, you really want a quartz, a 3mm quartz rod to go through. So I don't know how I can get my hands on something similar to that, basically. Oh, jeez, I've just got to really think, I suppose that. Because you can't have it conducting, because it will just short the little baby out. Why not? So I need something 3 mil non-conducting, 3 mil diameter non-conducting that doesn't blow up. Gee, that's a hard one to think. Perhaps there's because you want a rigid thing that the wire, the base moves against. So you really need that top wire held rigidly, and you want high temperature stuff. So it could be ceramic, anything. Just there's nothing laying around the shed, so to speak, which allows you to do it. But that being said, I've done back of the envelope calculations with a microscope over 15 mil. You can actually see the difference. Now, what may happen is that as it heats up, you'll see the two legs should move separately, because if you're not building it perfectly, there's going to be stresses and stuff, and so it should happen a few times. You should cycle it for a few times, leave it for a few times. But the thing is that the direction, the actual position that these two legs go to should be current dependent. By miniaturizing everything, your power supply is your limiting variable. I must admit, look, it is for absolute sure that the internet demonstrations of this are complete and utter fraud. And I'm actually a bit disappointed you see a student go out and demonstrate. Oh my God, they're expanding this. Them, no mean feat that you can see them expanding this road. They're pretty serious about it. I don't know how it's going to happen. That's a bit scary. Oh my God, fella. So it's high traffic coming back here. It's to find that ceramic thing. And it's, you know, a piece of glass, something which can go up high temperature. Carbon, wood, Teflon. You really want it hard and solid. There's a ceramic power resistor is the thing that comes to mind. Oops, that comes to mind with something to mount it against. But it's just so clumsy ceramic power resistors. Ceramic power resistors are something which are high temperature enough. It's just that they're so big and chunky. A power resistor is a resistor which is go to high temperature and dissipate power. You don't see them nowadays. I mean, basically, you'd have a completely mad circuit. Like nowadays, you look at circuit, you look at power supplies that I've got in the shed, and you go, "This is madness." It's sort of built like by someone on a desert island with just a transformer and basic levels. Whereas today's power supplies are a dream, and they can't overheat. They're just switch mode, and you know, if you're taking too much power off it, it just doesn't care. Whereas the other ones, if they take too much, because there's a power consumption by the unit itself. If it's putting out too much power, it overheats. Yeah, so just really, really trying to think how on earth I can actually get these coils to I really just don't have anything ceramic. Can you? Sorry, I was going to say, can you think of anything ceramic? Just trying to think. There's glass. You can't get anything glass now. What a horrible, horrible viewpoint. Yeah, so basically I need something high temperature, 3 millimeters thick to wind this around, to hold it stable, because what happens is that you want it to be in an expansion distance from the mean point of your rod. I'm just really, really, really trying to think of it. Sorry, it's really boring podcasting. This is where it works great cognitively. Now, the next thing, so this is RISI code 3, RISI 3. RISI 1 is the Einstein quantum turner. Yeah, I love it. Quantum turner. RISI 2 is the Thompson tap dancing. Yeah, Thompson tap dancing, I love it, the quantum tap dancing effect. And then the other aspect of it, I love it, love the idea of that one. The other one is, the third one is, and each of these has a demonstration, one of the things I was going to say for RISI 1, which is the quantum flipping, quantum turning, I love that, like time turning, quantum turning, it really gets you in. I need this battery pack and a fan to speed up, and you can feel it. It's something I really want to do. It's something which is just oozing doability, especially a fan with which is not blowing. It's got no, the thing is that the energy of a fan is to blow forward, and you can imagine one of these really spinning up. If it's got no nothing pushing back against it, then one of these little fans will really get your angular momentum up. And if you put it in a box, you can really and stop the wind going through it at all. You can make something pretty good. I'm pretty sure you can do that. So RISI 3 is this a conversion of the planet Earth into a classroom Earth, and it's a 1 trillion or B12, as I've called it, where the model has to be expanded by a factor of 10, 12 times over until its actual size. Is that beautiful? And so I've begun slowly working on it, and I discuss it with some kids in the supermarket, and went up to their house and gave them the first draft of a Star Wars version, because I'm interested in Star Wars, and this the two together. This time I've gone the next cycle, so it's really hard and clumsy. And what I've done is there's a British celebrity chef called Heston, and I've got him on the PowerPoint introducing the galactic pancake and explaining how it's through it. Now, we have the issue here is that as a nobody with no commercial viability, I don't exist, because they're only interested in relating to people who exist yet. Entire thing is to actually get the no, pick it up by its legs, shake it up, and see what information comes out of it. So I did a hello world to the Australian Space Agency. Believe it or not, there is an Australian Space Agency spending a whopping $30 million, possibly over 5 years. Okay, so this is the amount that the Americans would spend that much on just pamphlets and toilet paper at NASA, okay? as the budget was there. I asked, oh, how about supporting this? They said, no, however, there is government money to be had on anyone who can present, do anything for girls' education and STEM. So I'm going to stick that together, slowly start sticking RECE3 together, and pushing across. Now, the other interesting thing is that when I had my first successful swing with the Einstein, twist with the Einstein pendulum, how are we doing for time? Okay, I think everyone will be very, very pleased. It's one. What's the time now? Okay, I'm not actually doing that good of time after all. Sorry, mate. Safely and behind, tucking in behind this card. So this, I'm going up the Lapstone Monocline. So it's certainly a flat basin of a few hills, and then you hit the Blue Mountains, and the Blue Mountains suddenly pop up, and you go from 60 metres above sea level to 360. And so there's a 300 metre climb, and the climb is over 3 kilometres, so it's a 300 metres up to 300 kilometres. That's a 1 in 10 grade easily to come up here. Of course, yep, that's what you do. I think this would be 1 in 10, but you can hear the engine say, feed me fuel, feed me fuel. Oh, there you go, up to another whatever it is, rev, stuff like that. And of course, just as you really need to put the pedal to the metal, they drop the speed limit just in time for it to dip down. It's actually over 10 gradient. Okay, that being said, all the stars are aligning, I think, for RECE3. It's just putting it all together, and just being patient and listening. So RECE3 requires, because it's a global classroom exercise, it requires a global organization, and with the connections and the process, and I think Rotary will do it. I just have to work out how it goes. So sitting in the RSL, I know how these committees and organizations work. They work on a letter, but the letter's got to be of the right content. So I'll write a letter to Rotary, say, how about we don't adopt it, but move to explore potential development, that is funding options, capabilities, move along those lines. So in order to do it, have an official contact person to look at the viability of it. So I know that sounds awful, but these are the questions. How can we be involved? How does it get organised? And so how that can be involved is, it's an international education project, and there is someone, I'm just going to slow down here, mate, sorry. There's this big, huge fuel tanker going up here. That's how it all works. There's fuels imported at the coast, and it's pumped inside, tanked in inland with the sea. Occasionally you come along the road and there's these huge fuel tanks. When I say fuel tanker, it's your normal fuel tanker that you have. I may be out of touch, but what they have is, it's articulated. So it's your normal fuel tanker times two. Sure, in America they'll say, oh, well, I've got eight times. And in Germany, they have to work out a way. They've all got electric cars and all that type of stuff. And Australia's got a huge electric car challenge in front of us. Are you really seriously, mate? Oh, God. Sorry, there's an intersection there. Okay, well, that being said, that's a wrap-up of RECE-inspired strategies. RECE strategy. I think that might be it. It's got to be something which really grabs people's attention and puts it out. Okay, look, thanks a lot. And I've got to do an external strategy with an internal strategy. And the internal strategy is tread softly internally and externally. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm off to pick up kids and go on the next round of my errands. Okay, we're doing well. We're only 2 minutes behind schedule. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.